about the nonsense. As live as they want to be from California, here's Sean and Jen.
We're snugging it.
Meaning I'm wearing a Snuggie over a sweatshirt and everything else because I'm freezing because I'm on a ton of drugs that make me cold.
Well, in your defense, it is kind of cold in here.
Yeah, but it's California cold. I really shouldn't be this cold.
California cold, don't feel like Christmas. Just stopped.
Oops.
Welcome to Hyper Nonsense. We are the podcast that comes to you straight from the heart of California. I've been wondering for a while if our theme song is just, if it needs to come back and have the whole excessive outro. And then I went and I forgot, you know, I'm using the Boss Jack Studios now to run the soundboard, and it's only the second week. And by default, if you load a clip into the Boss Jacks, so we'll use, we'll use this one as an example. If you tap it once, again, this is the default setting. If you tap it once, you get the sound. If you tap it again, it fades out.
Oh, yeah, it does.
But that's by default, and I thought that's what our theme song was going to do, but apparently
it just stopped.
I changed it to not do that. So
there we are. Technical live, difficulties.
Live troubleshooting and production. That's how we do it here. Other shows, they spend hours getting all that stuff down ahead of time. But no.
Right, but no, we're very honest about our production process.
We believe,
let you know everything.
We believe in a high level of transparency here.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jen, how are you doing besides being cold?
I'm kind of high, actually, from all the drugs I'm on.
Yeah,
I've been struggling with allergies really since Christmas. And then yesterday, I decided to attack all the dust bunnies in the bedroom, and Sean helped with that. And there were a lot of them. So when I clean, I get sick, even if I drug up beforehand, because you're still breathing in stuff. And it takes me a couple days to recover, so I'm still not quite well, and I'm on a lot of drugs to sort of deal with all of my allergies. So that's how I am. I'm very calm, though. You know?
I just realized something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not gonna address it again until later, but I just realized it, so we'll see if I remember.
Okay.
So here we are. It's a wonderful Saturday evening here in California. There's an aircraft flying overhead. Not sure if the microphones are picking that up. So it's been, you know, it's funny. It feels like it's been such a long time since we recorded a show. And I mean, in a way, I guess a lot has happened. You know, Christmas has passed. The New Year's holiday has passed. And other things. So let's talk about some of that. So Christmas.
Christmas, yes.
We did go to my sister's house for Christmas.
Yes.
And that was, you know, lots of fun. We had a nice meal, did a gift exchange.
Yeah, it's always nice. I like your family. I really do. I like hanging out with them. But
yeah,
they have the House of Allergens. I've referred to it in my haiku as House of Allergens because it's got, well, they like having a real tree, which is fine if you're someone who can tolerate that. Have a real tree at your house, you know. And then they have six dogs, most of which are small dogs, but they're six, you know. And so I can handle the allergens in that environment for maybe 3 hours before I'm sick, and then it's going to take me days to recover.
Yeah.
So I plan ahead, figuring, okay, get everything done before Christmas, like as far as work I need to do or anything else I want to get done, you know, wrapping presents, obviously, any errands we have to run, all of that stuff that requires me to be fairly, you know, altered by drugs. I try to get all that done beforehand, knowing I'll have like about three or four days for me to recover from Christmas over there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just how it is. I mean, this isn't a complaint. This is just reality. So you may as well plan around it, you know?
Right. So we did that, and I think the big things to really mention on this show as far as, I don't know, Christmas gifts, I guess, is we got an Apple TV.
We did, yeah.
And
that's been fun to kind of go, what does this do? And what does this do? And what does that have? And is that one pay or is that one free? And what does this do? That's kind of what we've been doing with it right now.
Yeah.
And watching Netflix through it.
Right. What we had been doing, you know, our real kind of TV solutions were a Mac Mini that was probably, I don't know, circa 2010, 2011-ish. Was hooked up to the TV, and then, you know, we've talked about how recently we pitched an antenna for over-the-air channels, but the Mac Mini is not a bad solution for your TV viewing, and fortunately, it's a model that has, it's the last model that has an optical drive, so we could actually play DVDs on it, so it kind of doubled as our media streamer and DVD player. But it's not a great solution for your traditional, you know, watching TV from the couch type setup, because even with a wireless mouse and a keyboard, I was constantly having to, you know, if something needed to be changed or whatever, I was constantly having to, you know, stand up. In some cases, it was so I could actually just see what was on the TV, because when you take, you know, text from a web browser, which is how we were watching Netflix over the web using, you know, Safari on the Mac Mini. When you do that, the text obviously becomes really small on the screen. So despite the fact we have a 52-inch television, you know, we had it set to, I think we had it set to 720p. And I don't see real well. So anytime we would go to watch a show, I'd have to stand up and go look at the thing. And, you know, it works. It's just, it's not the greatest solution for that. And really, most of what we were doing was watching Netflix anyway. I mean, one of the nice things about having a computer hooked up to your TV is you theoretically have access to all of the video content that the web has to offer, because there's no barriers in between. You don't have to worry about, well, does this service have an app on this platform or whatever? If you've got a web browser, then you can watch anything. So that's nice, but really we were just watching Netflix anyway. It was kind of overkill, and the Apple TV's been an interesting experience. It's a better interface for just, you know, navigating around on the little remote control that Apple gives you, and It comes preloaded with, I want to say, about 30 channels, as I believe they're called. These, of course, are not like your TV channels. They're essentially just apps that run off the device. And as we mentioned, Netflix is there, Hulu Plus is there. And then there's, you know, some of the premium networks are there, HBO Go. Now, what sucks is a lot of the cable news services that are on there, there's a CNBC app, and I think a Fox News app, and there's another one. And in order to watch some of the programming, you have to verify that you have an active account with some sort of pay TV service, so a cable company or satellite. And I tried to kind of, I don't want to say hack around that, but the way it works is the device, if you want to watch one of those feeds, the device gives you an activation code. You go to a website, you put in the code, and then it says, okay, you know, do this to verify that you have an account with, you know, a preferred allowable provider. And one of the providers is AT&T UVerse. And technically, because of our home phone, we do have AT&T service. And I tried that. You know, I tried to verify through that. And on the website, it actually told me that it worked. But it doesn't work on the Apple TV. So they're doing, you know, they're doing some secondary level of checking on the back end just to kind of see if you really have pay TV service. And one of those feeds also gave me the option to verify my account through Charter, and we have Charter internet only. And I tried the same thing through there. And again, on the website where I was activating the service, it told me it was working. But when I went back to the Apple TV, it said no. There gave me an error. But anyway, there are still some things on there that you can watch. One thing you can do is there's a PBS channel on there, and PBS is free over-the-air TV. So you still have to go through an activation setup where you have to, you know, generate a code, go and create an account. But all you do is you just select what is the closest PBS channel to where you live. And in our case, we wound up with KEQD, I think, out of San Francisco.
That's pretty close.
But it works. I mean, we did watch one show on there. And it isn't like none of these channels are necessarily the equivalent of what you'd get if you were watching one of these channels on cable, though some of the channels do have, some of the news channels do have live feeds. What's weird is one of the things we can watch is Sky News out of the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And we can actually watch the live Sky News feed. And we can't, I don't know if we can do that with any of the American channels or not. But, well, I think ABC News we can.
Yeah, I think there was one. It might have been ABC.
But I think all that ABC News channel does is it has a live feed, but I think all it does is it just
replays its newscast.
It just, well, day, yeah, but I know? Think what it does really even beyond that is, because the way it works is you go into the channel and it gives you a choice of these different, you know, sort of pre-recorded shows, and then it gives you this option of a quote-unquote live feed. But it seems to me like all the live feed does is it just randomly plays the episodes that are available, you know, one by one.
Mm-hmm.
Because we started watching a 2020 episode on there, and it said it was going to go to break, and it did go to break.
And then it went to something else.
It went to some other
little filler,
some other show entirely, and we thought, okay, well, maybe this is
their form of commercials, essentially.
Yeah,
advertising other stuff they're doing.
Right.
I think it was an interview. It was an interview with an actor, I think it was. And he was talking about the shows he's on, which are probably on that channel.
Right.
And some affiliate thing he was doing with a product.
Yeah.
You know, that had to do with commercials and stuff that, you know, oh, I'm involved with this product and here's what the commercials look like, you know, that kind of thing. So we felt like, okay, this is their form of commercial, you know, that's what this is, and then we'll have, you know, 2020 back again. But no, that's not what appeared. So what we had to do is, if you scroll down, there's a section where they've got available sort of segments of their 2020 shows or some of their recent ones. So we found the original segment that we'd watched, and then in a row, there were four more that composed the rest of the show.
Yeah.
You know, so we did get to watch that the entirety of that show just in little segments, you know, but the whole thing was there. And there were no commercials in between this. So it wasn't like watch a video, wait for a commercial, have an ad pop up. You know, that didn't happen. It just was this one, that one, the next one, you know, kind of thing. And we could probably go, like, if we wanted to right now and watch something on 2020, we could probably go and find, you know, the show segmented into four or five pieces and get the whole thing.
Well, yeah, and that was the problem. You know, we started watching the show, and we never gave us the rest of the show.
Right, because we didn't know that it wouldn't go through those five, you know, or four or five, you know,
well,
little segments.
And what happened is we had just selected the live stream, and that 2020 show was already playing. So then after it kept rolling and rolling and never taking us back to the show, I went, okay, this is weird. Let's go back and see if we can find it somewhere else. We did, so ultimately it was fine.
But
it's been an interesting experience to have access to at least a little more television.
Mm-hmm.
I understand, you know, there are now like three or four of these set-top boxes that are out there that are competing. And I understand that in some cases, like with the Roku, that has more available content than the Apple TV because the Roku does allow for third-party apps, and as of right now, the Apple TV is still a closed-off platform. You know, Apple is only allowing a handful of developers to put their apps on there, you can't just, it's not like, you know, if you want to make an iOS app or an Android app with the Apple TV, it's really closed off, and I don't know what the requirements are to get in there, but they're being real strict about it right now. It's one of those things that people have been speculating on for at least, it feels like, a year and a half, that the Apple TV is going to eventually, you know, open up and have its own, you know, essentially its own app store. And I know some people are really hoping for that to happen. I hope now that what does not happen, if that comes to pass, is, you know, Apple releases some brand new version of Apple TV and says, and now we're opening up to all these apps, but you've got to buy the new one. The old ones aren't going
to
work.
Yeah, that would not be good, you know, or for it to make you pay for each individual app, you know.
Well, I
think that would be a problem too.
I think what you'll see is it'll be up to the, you know, developer for each channel. They'll be able to say, you know, you can have our content for free, or you can activate an account. So it'll be something like that. I mean, I think, and while it's still really early to say this, but anybody who, you know, has seen the development of digital media over the last 15 years, we can see that there's going to be an eventual dismantling of the way that cable and satellite TV works, and eventually everything is just going to kind of live as an app. I mean, there will probably always be something that looks like television, but we're reaching a point now where this idea of, you know, I pay a set rate for all of these channels and I may only want really a portion of them, but I have to pay for all of them. That kind of model is just dying. I mean, people don't want to do that anymore, and it's becoming easier and easier to get away from that. And ultimately, you know, the way that Apple TV works is what's going to happen. Just where instead of, you know, you pay a single provider for, you know, a trunk of bandwidth that, you know, gives you all this stuff, you just pick and choose what you want. And I don't know, you know, economically, I don't know at what point that becomes unmanageable. I mean, you know, we pay the $8 or $9 a month right now for Netflix, but we're not paying for anything else, and I'm not in any hurry to do that. So I don't, it's one of those things that I think about sometimes, you know, at what point does this become, I mean, if, you know, you think about cable TV where you might have 120 channels. Well, now if you want to have, you know, if those all have to exist as sort of little singular content distributors, then what are they all going to be worth, and who's going to pay for all of them? But I guess it won't really matter because people will just pick the ones ultimately they really want, and maybe it'll all balance out. I don't know.
Well, I think, you know, some of what's on cable, and again, we haven't had cable in a long time, so I'm not like an expert of what all's out there, but there's channels you're going to gravitate towards, and there's channels you're like, nope, not interested, don't care, never going to watch this, you know? So I think if you get the pick and choose kind of, you know, I mean, essentially what you're describing is what people have wanted forever, and it's the a la carte version of cable, you know,
right.
I'd like this channel and that channel, I don't need that one, you know, that kind of thing. So, I mean, yeah, people are going to pick and choose. And if it's a channel they absolutely love and must have, they'll probably be willing to pay a couple bucks for it, you know? But I don't see every channel going to the Netflix version, you know, of you pay us this much, you know, you pay us $8.90. What was it? $8.99 a month,
I think,
or something,
so, yeah.
You know? I don't think all of them will do it. I think they'll probably either have you pay a one-time fee to access all the content, or it'll be a really low fee like you would expect from like an app. You know what I mean? Like a lot of apps are priced really low. So it'll be like a monthly, you know, low, like, I don't know, $1.99 or something. And you can subscribe again every month or unsubscribe or whatever. I think it'd be something like that. And it'll give people the flexibility we've been wanting for a very, very long time.
Yeah. I mean, it's obvious. You can see the writings on the wall. it's just going to take a while to get there because we're talking about having these, you know, huge companies, not just even the cable companies, but also, you know, the media companies themselves. They tend to be slow moving and adopting new technology. So, but anyway, we're enjoying the experience so far. And my hope is that, you know, there will be more functionality added to Apple TV. But I think if you're like us and you don't have any kind of cable or pay TV, and you're just looking for an easy solution to get some internet content on your TV, then the Apple TV is a nice way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's things out there now like the Fire TV, and you can kind of, you can do a certain amount of this kind of thing with a Chromecast, but the Chromecast still requires devices outside of itself to operate. And, you know, the Apple TV is a self-contained, it's small. It's like the size of two hockey pucks, maybe, stacked on top of each other. It's tiny. And it's real simple to use. It's got one HDMI cord and one power cord. And you can run it off of Wi-Fi or Ethernet. And, you know, we're doing that on Wi-Fi. And so far, it's been fine. I have noticed, and I can't remember if this was happening before, but we've been watching the first and so far only available season of Cutthroat Kitchen on Netflix. And I've been noticing some aliasing in the video when there's certain things on the screen. For example, we watched one last night.
Yeah.
And the chef had a
black sort of pinstripe shirt.
Yeah.
And the lighting would hit the pinstripes and sort of light those up a little bit. So it looked like, you know, he had like little tiny petite LED strips yeah. going through his shirt. It was kind of like lighting, you know, in a really weird way, which I know cameras can pick up. Like I've always heard, if you're going to be in the studio audience for some show, don't wear a pinstripe and, yeah. you know, things like that, that will pick up really odd for cameras. And we noticed that in the last episode we'd watched, or maybe
yeah,
the last episode of the season. But
I've noticed that effect happening in other shots. And my suspicion here is that the cameras in studio aren't picking that up, and it's being caused somewhere in the processing and encoding, decoding of the video that ultimately happens by the time it gets to us via, you know, Netflix, where obviously things are being compressed and downscaled.
Right,
and
but
all
it
that
wasn't
kind of stuff.
That big a deal. It's like, it's okay, he's got a kind of a shiny shirt he didn't anticipate would be shiny. So what? You know, it didn't change anything.
I'm trying to remember if I was noticing that when we were still watching it on the Mac Mini, or if this is a problem that sort of came with the Apple TV, and
I don't know.
I can't remember.
I don't remember it happening. So, I don't think we watched this particular show on the Mac Mini.
I think we watched a couple. We watched a couple.
But I mean, also the, for lack of a better word, the graphics card in the Apple TV is probably newer and better than the one in the Mac Mini. So maybe that's part of, you know,
yeah,
where it's coming from a little bit.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah, give you more details, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and it could be this. I mean, as I stated earlier, we were watching the Mac Mini at 720p, and I'm guessing that the, by default, the Apple TV probably outputs a 1080i, so you're going to see some of these kind of imperfections a little more.
But they're
and it's
not a big deal.
No, it's
know?
Not. I mean, you're watching Cutthroat Kitchen. Now, I'll be interested to see if this problem arises with movies, because if it happens a lot in movies, then I'm going to be, you know, looking for a solution. But it's not something that I think anybody should worry about, or it should deter you from buying one of these. It was just something that I noticed and kind of was surprised by. But
mm-hmm.
the other big Apple thing that happened around Christmas, and it wasn't really a Christmas gift so much as it just kind of coincidentally happened around Christmas time. But Jen is now sitting in front of, to her, a new iMac.
Right.
And it's...
it's huge.
It's a 27-inch, and it's identical in terms of spec to the one I have. Mm-hmm. And I know that a friend of ours gave that to you. He didn't need it anymore.
Right, and he wanted to find a home for it with people that would use it.
Yeah.
He wasn't interested in, like, just selling it off and whatever. You know, it was... some of us get attached to our machines and we wanted to have a good home, you know, that kind of thing. And that's kind of where he was. And he knows I'll use it. And I have been.
Now, you had been using for, I don't know, the last year or so, maybe a little longer, a MacBook Air.
And I love that thing, too.
That was connected, you know, you had it hooked up to all the external stuff and you were using it pretty much exclusively as a desktop computer.
Yeah. But it's good to have it as a laptop in case, like, you know... I don't know, the power goes out here and I have to write something for work. I can maybe go to Starbucks and write it, you know. But I never ended up having to do that while I was using it because the power stayed on. And I have learned that I don't tend to really, like, want to bring a computer with me all over the house or wherever I go.
Yeah.
You know, I always thought, well, maybe I would do that if I had one, but I don't, you know. I sit here and work on whatever I'm working on or I play whatever game I'm, you know, playing. And then I'm done and I walk away. You know, but usually I'm sitting here working is really what, honestly, that's what it comes down to. But I don't know. I just didn't feel like I wanted to really, like, bring, you know, a little notebook with me. And I prefer the big clunky keyboard I have in front of me that makes noises when I type to the little tiny ones on the laptops, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. But it was a nice little machine. It worked pretty good. It didn't have a huge hard drive. I filled it up pretty quick.
Yeah, we had some challenges about that.
Right. But that's been, that got resolved. And then, so it wasn't necessarily just, you know, me putting too much stuff on it. It got resolved when we switched it to Yosemite. And then we switched everything over to what I'm using now.
Right.
It's huge. I mean, I remember looking at this thing going, this is the biggest damn monitor I've ever used.
Well,
this is just going to be overwhelming. But now I realize I can open like four browser windows when I need to like work on something where I'm referencing three different sites and writing, you know? And there's enough room for me to do that now.
Well, and the setup that you had with the MacBook, you were just driving, you know, you had a 25-inch monitor, but you were only driving it, you know, at the highest end of VGA graphics. And now you can do, you know, the full, I mean, you're like, you know, you're using the highest resolution that iMac can give you, which I think is over 2000 pixels. So, I mean, it's a huge change in the number of pixels that you have available, which obviously gives you more space on the desktop.
Right. But, and I played Diablo 3. I'm like, oh my God, Sanctuary is beautiful. There were so many little details I'd never seen before, and you know, all the background artwork and the stuff in the walls and the stuff on the floors and things like that. It's just so beautiful. I'm like, wow, okay, this is cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's that. Now, fortunately, as I said earlier, the model of that iMac, and we weren't really 100% sure on this before we got it here and set it up. But as I said, the model is the same identical model as mine. It's got the same processor, video card, same amount of RAM.
Yep.
You know, because over the years, a few times this insufferable thing has happened where your computer has lapped mine in terms of spec. I mean, we just can't have that here. That is unacceptable.
You know, the interesting thing, though, is, like, I'm never someone that goes, I need to get a new computer. New computers just come to me. I don't know why, but they do.
The only times, and, you know, it's funny now thinking about that, because in a lot of ways, your first Apple computer that was only yours was an iMac. Mm-hmm. So you've gone full circle now. You went from iMac to eMac to two Mac Minis to MacBook Air back to iMac.
Right.
This is also the first time we've ever had two iMacs.
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm.
I need a Mac Pro tower now, by the way. So I need everybody to donate all your money. Hyperanalysis.com/support and buy me a Mac Pro.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that, you know, it's funny you say that, but in a lot of ways it is true. I mean, mm-hmm.
when I've never in my life said I need to go shopping for a new computer, ever. I will use a computer until it is unusable.
Historically,
if you know nothing changes, I will sit there and like use it until it's totally unusable, and then I'll consider it. And I rarely get the chance to get to that point because things happen, you know.
Historically, kind of what's happened. I mean, when you went from your first iMac, which was a G3 iMac,
mm-hmm.
to the
blue one,
yeah, to the eMac,
mm-hmm.
which, if anybody remembers from the old show, I actually told this story about me going out because I bought that eMac from some college kids.
Oh, yeah.
And I told the whole mm-hmm. story about, you know, going out to their apartment and everything, all that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, you were running into issues where you were trying to watch videos online and your old iMac wouldn't play them.
Right. I remember
so
that. It was.
You needed something a little newer, a little faster. We got you the eMac. And then I can't remember. Well, I know one of the reasons that we wanted to upgrade you after that to something else is as you started making podcasts on your own and you were using that USB headset,
mm-hmm.
the CRT display, everybody, in the eMac was causing interference with your headset.
Yeah.
And we wanted to find a solution to that. So that's when we got you. I think we got your first Mac Mini and you had an external monitor. Mm-hmm. And which was probably the 19-inch monitor that's still out in the shed.
It could be.
That I've had now for, I think, 10 or 11 years. But anyway, and so those were situations where there was a real, you know, there was a need for you at that point really to upgrade. But every step after that has kind of been
just kind of happened
or random.
Yeah.
And I think part of the reason, though, that we upgraded you to that second Mac Mini was, of course, as they always do, the optical drive in that first Mac Mini died.
You wanted to have, so
we got, you know, and then we got that Mac Mini, and then really the MacBook just kind of happened. That wasn't a planned thing, and neither was this iMac. So,
but I'm really happy. I mean, it was nice, you know. I'm not complaining, but it's just odd that, you know, I've never been the type of person that's like, oh, they have the new model now, I have to get it. I've never been that way, you know.
Jen, I will say this, and I'm kind of grateful for this. But Jen is not one who really wants for much in terms of material things. Doesn't get, you know, the lust for shiny things.
Nope. Mm-mm.
Just does, it's you know, she's very pragmatic and just feels like if this is doing the job as far as I need it to, then
that's what I need. You know, I don't need anything more than that. And I don't know. I'm not one to shop anyway. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't buy a lot of clothes. I don't wear makeup because I'm allergic to all of it. So that's easy to avoid, you know. It's going to make me sick. It's going to make my eyes itch. Heck with that, you know. So I don't do that. I don't do, like, the whole going to nail salons because I'm probably allergic to something in there. So forget it, you know. So there's a lot of stuff that a lot of women enjoy and spend money on that makes them happy and makes them feel good that is only going to make me ill. So, I mean, I don't spend any of the money on that because I can't,
I think,
you know.
I mean, I just think just in terms of kind of people in general, I mean, I do think that there are people, women, you know, that would still want, you know, maybe a newer computer or a newer car.
Yeah, my car is ancient.
Well,
it's still running. We've had it fixed a bunch of times. It's fine.
Your car, as of this year, if it were a human being, would be old enough to drink legally.
Yes.
So, but you know, but I mean, and you're right that a lot of these things that are kind of stereotypically things that women want or might spend money mm-hmm. on, you have really no interest in.
Well, I have physical limitations that make it so I can't. It doesn't matter what I would think of it. It just, I know, you know, if I put makeup on, I'm going to break out. And if I'm lucky, it'll only be a little bit of a breakout and not hives, you know. Yeah. So I avoid all that because it's just no fun, you know.
You know, I can say that I am someone who tends to get afflicted with the desire for shiny things. So I'm envious a little bit of you for that. In my case, you know, I get to a point where most of the time I look at something I have and I go, I know of a better way to do this, but I need something new in order to do it. I need newer technology or technology that I don't own. And most of the time that's where, you know, my affliction falls under.
So I think that's the difference is I've always been poor, and in work environments that involve technology, you know, I used to teach, so I was always using older stuff. Yeah. And, you know, I would teach in classrooms where they had a computer, but it hadn't been, you know, it was from several years previous, and it was already kind of out of date. And so if you're going to use it to do a lesson plan, or if I'm going to use, you know, something at work to make something happen, it's always been a matter of, okay, I'm not getting anything new, so let's see what I can make this do, you know? And I think I kind of stuck there.
Yeah, well, no, I understand that, and I'm glad that you're that way, not because I think, I don't know, it's wrong to be any other way. It's just, it's easier, obviously, on us because we don't really have a lot of money.
Right.
So you're not, you know, the more that you're feeling you want to spend money on things when you don't have money, the more stressful it becomes.
Right. That's
a problem. You can fall into one of two bad situations there. You either become resentful about the money not being there, or you go and spend it anyway, whether or not you should spend it and or can actually spend it, in terms of you're either gonna not be able to pay your bills, or you're going to burn through credit that you're not going to be able to pay back.
So. Right, yeah. And if you go online and look at anything geared towards relationships, one of the biggest things people fight about is money.
Yeah.
Because from what you see on these websites that, of course, are looking for drama, you know, they want to post drama. They don't want to post rational people working things out. They want to post things that will get, you know, clicks. And so you'll get, like, people writing in saying that their spouse, and it goes either way, their spouse spends a ton of money all the time, and they are the opposite of that. They don't want to spend any money. They want to save, and they just keep, you know, coming to a conflict. And so they ask some random person online who has a blog, you know, how do we fix this? And it's usually the same answers that involve, like, communication and things like that. But obviously, if they're writing some random person, they perhaps tried that route and it didn't go. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of good that, you know, we're not doing that sort of thing, I guess, is what I'm saying. But
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like, you know, because of my allergies, I tend to try to find a very stable environment with everything I'm doing so I can reduce all of the variables that are going to make me ill. So, you know, I've got no desire to go into a store with a bunch of people who may or may not be sick and not know it, you know, exposing me to God knows what, any cigarette they may have smoked, perfume or animal hair on their clothing, you know, whatever's in the air of the store itself with all their scented products or whatever they cleaned things with, you know, I'm not one to just want to go into those environments anyway. You know,
yeah.
And when you do that, it's harder to want to shop for things. You know, okay, I have this amount of time and I'm going to get sick. Go. You know what I mean?
Right.
Run out the door, you know, that kind of thing. And that's why I think I don't shop for clothing a lot, because, I mean, honestly, I work from home. No one cares what I'm wearing. It doesn't matter. I don't have a need for, like, business wear. Like when I worked, you know, as a teacher or, in, you know, in a bookstore, I can wear whatever I want. So I just wear what's comfortable. But in addition to that, like, there are fabrics I'm allergic to as well. So I don't want to, like, go through and encounter those. I don't want to, you know, guess what's in the fabric. And there's a lot of, you know, new clothes come with, like, you should wash them before you wear them because there's some kind of chemical they put in it, you know, a sizing or a starch or something. I don't know what it is, in new clothes that make them, you know, stay nice on the rack and things like that. And I'm allergic to that, so I don't really want that either, you know? And if you put all this together, it's like, I'm not, you know, not a shopper from a moral philosophy. It's self-defense, you know? Yeah. It's like trying not to die. So I'm not saying I'm like better than anybody. I'm saying this is the parameters of my world, and this is how I cope with it, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so that pretty much gets us through the highlights of Christmas.
Yes.
And the next thing after that is, well, the Monday immediately after Christmas. And Christmas was on a Thursday, so that was when our hearing was scheduled for our bankruptcy.
Right. Yes. So.
And, yeah. Uh-huh. I think this is part of the reason why everything, like, it just feels like everything was so much farther away. You know, it's only been a week since we've done a show, really.
But there's just so much stuff.
But it just feels like it's so much longer ago. So that was Monday the 29th. Now, we were instructed by our attorney to be at the hearing. It's a hearing. I don't know. I wouldn't call it a room. It was not the courthouse.
It was not the courthouse. It was kind of, I don't know, a conference room sort of thing.
You could call it that.
Something like that.
It was like, and this kind of threw me because she gave us the address and I looked it up online and I was looking at it on the Google's Street View because I was trying to figure out where we could park. And I'm looking at this building, and it's very nondescript, and I'm thinking, I'm looking for something that looks like a courthouse, and I'm thinking, maybe, I mean, she's an attorney, she does bankruptcies, she's obviously done this more times than we have.
Right, yeah.
Maybe something's amiss here, and I went and I looked up bankruptcy court, Santa Barbara, California, and it gave me a different address. And I thought,
that's because it wasn't there. It wasn't that location.
Right. And I thought, oh man, something weird's going on.
No, and go ahead.
What I did was then I typed in the address she had given me and bankruptcy. And then I got another page on the Santa Barbara Bankruptcy Court website that said hearings are located, you know, in these different places. And one of the locations was where we needed to go. And then I felt better and I went, okay, it's not actually at the court itself. It's at a separate location, so it should be all right. And then, you know, as we discovered, was there something else that you wanted to add to this? Or
no, I think you got it. I think that's pretty much all I was trying to say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we had to be there roughly about 8:30.
In the morning.
Yeah, 8:30 a.m. And as I might have said before, I'm not sure if I said it on this podcast, but we weren't certain if these hearings are scheduled or if it's just
everybody in the room kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I don't want to say first come, first serve,
no,
but everybody,
like,
show up.
Right, and it turned out, this is so many things about this setup I thought were quite bizarre. Okay, so you go there. You've got all these people milling about in the front who all were told to show up the time we were told to show up, but the thing ain't open yet, so you can't go in.
Yeah, let me back up just a little bit. Let me back up just a little bit. We live about 2 hours away from Santa Barbara, give or take. And a friend of ours graciously offered to drive us.
And we're very thankful for that.
That was
huge.
Beyond stellar. Because obviously I can't drive. Jen theoretically could, but it wouldn't be a good idea.
Yeah.
And the only other option would have been for us to take the train down to Santa Barbara the night before.
To take the train and then spend money to have a place to stay the night before and then figure out how to get there. You know, between wherever we stayed and the place we need to be, which could involve a cab. So,
well,
it's like you don't want to spend all this to go to your bankruptcy hearing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it would
just like, no.
It would have added a level of, you know, complexity to the situation that we didn't really need. But I guess if it had to be done, it's what we would have done. So I was talking to him about it and he says, well, you know, let's leave at 5:30. He said, what time do you need to be there? I told him. He said, let's leave at 5:30. And I said, you know, 6 will probably be okay. And last week I was talking to him, you know, before, and he said, you know, let's do 5:30 just in case we hit traffic. And I said, all right.
That's smart. You know, let's. And he's been up and down these roads, and he's so
done the drive. And
he had a good reason to be able to assess what the traffic might be, you know?
So we get down there, and it's by the time we kind of find the building, park the car, it's about 8:20. And one thing I will say is it was cold.
Yeah, it was kind of cold. I didn't mind it at first, but after a while it wears on you.
So we were just kind of, we got out of the car, walked around, and finally we figured out exactly where the hearing, the building was. Because we found the address and we found a sign that said, you know, bankruptcy hearings. And we're like, okay, we're in the right place. So now we've got, you know, over an hour to burn. And we just kind of looked around and we noticed that there was a deli on the corner. And it was open.
Mm-hmm.
So we went in there and had various snacks and drinks. I had a breakfast burrito.
Right. And I knew I should eat something because I didn't know how long this would take. And if I wait too long to eat, I do get kind of dizzy. It's, you know, one of the many things wrong with me. I'm not diabetic or anything, but, you know, anyhow. So I'm looking around for something I can eat, and I ended up eating a bag of potato chips. So, yay carbs, I guess. I don't know. But it worked.
So we did that, and, you know, it's funny, we're sitting in the deli, and other people start coming in, and, like, a couple of guys come in suits. And
yeah, there was this guy that came in, and he was an older gentleman with perfectly combed, cut white hair and a suit, and he had glasses, and is this a Caucasian dude? And a briefcase, and I'm like, that's a lawyer, you know?
Yeah, well, our assumption was, okay, this is somebody that's going to be involved in the hearing,
yeah,
possibly.
I thought, this is somebody's lawyer waiting for his clients. That's, I mean, that he had that look, you know? He looked real professional.
So we hang out at the deli till, you know, about 8:30, and we go back across the street, and, you know, the door to the hearing room is locked, but all of a sudden, now, there's a whole lot of more people that are standing around outside.
Right. And most of them were in the deli. There were these two women speaking Spanish. They were over there. I'm like, okay, we're all here for the same thing.
So by now, there's about, you know, maybe 15 people that are standing outside. And nobody really knows anything. And about 15 minutes or so later, our attorney shows up and we talk to her for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And she gives us a rundown again of what to expect.
Yeah. There were, you know, as a good attorney should do, you know, there was some coaching and going over the questions we were going to get asked. And there was one item in particular that you wanted us to have some very kind of specific answers to, which we'll go over
a little later. Yeah, we'll get there.
So we,
I mean, she's really good. I'm really happy with her. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, we go in, they open the door, everybody goes in. They open the door at like 5 to 9. I mean, this was not a situation where anybody, at least on the bankruptcy hearing side, I guess, was needing or expecting a lot of pregame. It was just
it's like, here we are, go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like, you know, they open the door at 5 to 9. At you know, a few minutes after 9, they have an announcement, and they basically say, you know, if you're...
Well, I want to explain the room a little bit, because this is the part that surprised me.
Yeah, go ahead.
So you come in, and there's this tiny little, like, lobby. You know, there's a chair. It's big enough for a chair. It's like this tiny little area, and then there's a little hallway, and you're in a conference room. So you've got this desk at the front of the room, and two sort of tables coming off of the desk, so that it looks like a U shape, and it's as if the top of the U was pointing at you, kind of thing, you know, that shape. And sitting in the middle is a woman that's clearly in charge, and then sitting next to her is another woman that seems to be her assistant of some kind. And everything else in the room, there's a bunch of just chairs facing that way. So if you were going to go to a conference, it kind of had that look, you know, like a conference room sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really strange, because this meant that as you're waiting for your turn, you're listening to everybody else's case.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's weird. You know? I mean, I figured anything involving finances, I thought for sure they'd be like freaking out about privacy and all that, you know, and nope, big room, here you go, you know. So we ended up sitting in the front row because it was open. And it's better for me that way because, like I've said before on this podcast, if you sit me in a crowd of people and anyone's sick, I'm going to get sick. You know, if I start coughing or sneezing, I need to be able to move and get out of there real quick, you know. So front row was fine, but it was just strange that it was like, okay, we're all here and we're just going to do everybody's case. And if you're in here, you're listening and there you go. You know,
yeah.
It was just kind of like, and now I understood because, they, you know, we were coached that, okay, you need to have your ID and you need to have your social security card. You need to have that ready. In fact, the lady in charge even repeated, you need to have this ready when you walk up here. And, they'll check your ID and then they'll ask you if your address in the paperwork is correct, but they won't say your address because of security. You know, they've had people like writing down addresses or whatever. So that part, you know, was, I didn't understand why they would bother doing it. I knew it would be recorded. I thought, okay, maybe somebody else is hearing the recording and they don't want, you know, people to just be writing down addresses or whatever. But it dawned on me, you know, coming into that room, that there's a whole group of people here that could be like listening to your address. And so they, you know, that's why they're like, is it correct? But they won't say what it is, you know?
Yeah. And
that was weird. It's like that made sense then, but it was strange up until that moment. But yeah, I thought for sure it would be like you go into a little room and you're, you know, there's a lobby to wait in and then that you get called into a little room or something. But no, it's all just right there. Door open the entire time. Anybody off the street could have walked in.
Yeah, and the
and there's no security either. It's not like a courthouse where you have to go and, like, you know, put your bag on a conveyor and have it x-rayed and all of this. None of it. Anybody could have walked into this room with anything. Yeah. And I thought that was weird, too.
Yeah, so it was just kind of a surprise. I mean, what you have to realize is all of these hearings ultimately become public record. So
even so, though, I mean, I expected at the very least some kind of security thing, and there was nothing.
That was a surprise.
I mean, you know, what's to stop an extremely disgruntled person from coming in with a gun? You know,
yeah,
nothing. Absolutely nothing. So I was like just floored, you know?
Yeah, I guess for better or worse, we can say that we've reached a point when it comes to things like bankruptcies that they're so kind of routine that there's just no... there's just no inherent drama because, I mean, you're dealing with potential scenarios where, you know, I mean, people can be bankrupting against tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And you might imagine that there'd be scenarios where, you know, the creditors in those situations might be a little upset and they might just show up at the hearing if for no other reason, then they can, you know, physically harass you or,
yeah, they
whatever.
Can get in
I
your
mean,
face and demand things that maybe they don't have a legal right to demand, but they're there, you know.
You know, try to, you know, intimidate you.
Yeah.
If for no other reason, then they just feel like they can, so they're going to. I realize that under those situations, because there are, you know, protections built in, that they would probably be getting themselves in more trouble, but you just never know. It's a
right, or to
world,
stop
so.
You outside the front of the place, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no security at all, and I thought that was weird. You know, I've never been in a court-type situation. I've been in very few court-type situations. Some of them were jury duty. And I've never seen a situation where there was just no security at all.
You know, it kind of reminded me just of the kind of the flow of how the hearing takes place. Years ago, this was... before I knew you, I happened to be in a courtroom as, you know, a member of the public. I wasn't there for any legal thing that had anything to do with me. And a couple had to go in front of the judge for I guess for lack of a better term, it would be a divorce petition. And they just came up and they stood in front of the judge. And he asked them a bunch of, you know, a series of questions. And it was just a lot of yes, no stuff. And these people had no, you know, it's obvious that whatever the situation was, they just reached a point where they kind of went, okay, this relationship's over. We can work this out more or less amicably. You know, they didn't have any kids. I don't think they had any mutual property to speak of. And this was back in Illinois, and, you know, the laws are different. So it was just a matter of, you know, they went up and answered a bunch of questions. And at the end of the thing, the judge kind of, you know, hit his gavel and stamped a paper and said, "You're divorced. Have a good day," or whatever.
What do you say after that?
Yeah.
I mean, congrats. I don't know.
You're
divorced. That's what you came here for. That's what you wanted, you know?
Yeah. Right. So it kind of reminded me of that in a way. And I just kept kind of, and that was, you know, that was the first time where in my life where I had witnessed a legal thing like that, that to me in my mind, I would have built up to be something that was a lot more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that a lot of times divorce cases are complicated because of the reasons I said. And look like in this particular case, these two people, they didn't have anything that really needed to be, you know, contested over as far as the divorce goes. But so anyway, getting back to our fine.
We're sitting there.
Right. Well, we're sitting there, and there's a trustee, and she has an assistant, and at one point, and they're sitting at this table in the front of the room, and what they've got is, it's essentially just one table, and then they've taken two tables and sort of stuck them on the ends of that table, so it sort of looks like two L's going together.
Yeah, kind of, you know, or a U shape, whatever.
Yeah,
that
a U,
kind of
that's
thing.
A better, yeah, yeah, that's a better descriptor, uh-huh. And, you know, she says, okay, the way this works is we sit up here, the trustee, I sit up here.
And she made it clear that she would be the trustee for all of the cases today.
Yeah.
Just her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then she said, and then to her right was where any attorneys would sit. And then to the left is where, and she said to the right is where any attorneys or creditors would sit. And then to the left is where the debtors would sit.
Right. And this is odd, too, because now, you know, you're up there talking to answering questions of the trustee, and your lawyer's way over there, inside the room. You know, it's kind
of
strange.
Surprising.
Yeah. I mean, I knew I'd heard that said. I remember our attorney saying this is how it mm-hmm. goes. But until I had that visual, I'm like, you know, you're way over there. couldn't pass him a note. You couldn't whisper something, you know. Without it, I mean, I don't know what you'd do. Text them? I mean, they told you to turn your phones off, though,
right.
So you couldn't do that either. I mean, it was just, I don't know. I don't know if it was just the structure of the room, you know, making it that way, or if it was so that the trustee didn't have to sit there and remember, okay, that one's the attorney, not the other two here, or, you know what I mean? Just to make it go. But it was just kind of like, way over there on the other side is your attorney. Okay.
Yeah, and we were, well, I'm getting ahead of myself again, but mm-hmm. And then she says it's important that you read, she called it the green sheet.
Yeah, green paper.
In
it's
the,
just a
in
green
the back
piece
of
paper.
The room,
mm-hmm.
which we had already done. Our
right.
attorney,
our attorney
went
said,
over
you've read it,
it
you've read
us,
it a number of times, we've gone over it, you're fine. That's,
and
that's
she
it.
Said, if you're here representing yourself, there's a form you have to fill out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was at least, well, we talked earlier about the guy we saw at the deli. I don't think he turned out not to be an attorney, but he was actually representing a business.
Right. He was not the lawyer. I mean, they called him.
No.
This is ahead. We're kind of mixing things up a little bit. But this guy, since we've brought him up, you know, she calls the next case and she says, you know, the name of the attorney or something. And he walks up and this small Asian woman walks up with him. And she's wearing a black pantsuit and looked very sharp as well, you know, and she looks about 20. And and she goes over to sit where the lawyers sit. And it turned out he was the person filing
the
bankruptcy.
Yeah,
he was
the
client. He was the debtor. And he was representing a business. And he was the only one there that as long as we were there, that was representing a business instead of like individuals or a couple. And so there were slightly different questions he was asked. But, you know, it's like, oh, my God, he looks so professional. I thought he was a lawyer. But no, he's not. He's representing a company. So, I mean, it's good to look professional for that, too. But it surprised me. I thought this man carrying a briefcase looking all sharp was a lawyer. You know, I didn't know who the other person was with him. I didn't know who this woman was. But it turned out she was the lawyer, you know.
And, you know, it was funny, too, to see the range of dress for people that were on the, you know, the debtor side. I mean, I, is probably not surprising to anyone, I am rarely what you would describe as a fashion plate. And I at least showed up in, you know, something other than sweatpants and a t-shirt.
Right.
And I never actually, when I went up to the hearing, I never even took my, my jacket off, which was just a jacket.
Right. It's just a zipped up, you know, hoodie kind of thing, I guess. And no one cared.
Yeah. And it was, and there were people there who were definitely dressed at a lower level than me. So,
yeah. I mean, there was, you know, a couple of people wearing jeans. A couple of the Spanish women were just wearing clothes that probably came from thrift stores. And I know this because that's generally where I shop. You know, and they looked fine. They looked presentable, but they weren't like dressed like this, you know, business guy for you know? Yeah.
So, she explains the whole thing about, you know, the papers and if you're representing yourself and all that. And then, you know, the hearings start and it's just a matter of they call somebody up and if they have an attorney, you know, they sit as we said. And, you know, a few hearings went by. And
I want to say really quick, there was somewhere a listing of the order of who we called, right? And I was sitting, okay, so I'm in the front row and I'm sitting next to our attorney. She's on one side of me and Sean was sitting on the other. And the friend that came with, he came with, you know, in for this because he could, was on the other side and he came over and talked to you. And then he asked me and he's like, he said something like, I hope you're not superstitious because you're number 13.
Yeah. You
know? And I'm not superstitious. I don't care about that.
No.
But it was funny. You know, it's like, oh, we're number 13. Okay. Whatever. I don't care. It just meant we'll be waiting a while. And I didn't want to be first. So it's fine.
Yeah. And this was one of those things. And when I heard that, I kind of went, oh, man. Because as I said, I didn't know how long everything was going to take or what the order was going to be.
Right.
And when our attorney said the hearing was at 9, I was really hoping that meant we were going to be in at 9 because then theoretically we'd be out of there pretty quickly. But as you know, we'll talk about that more, but I'm sitting there going, okay, well, we're 13, so we've probably got a little while. And, you know, I, as I said earlier, I'd had a breakfast burrito and I drank, you know, a bottle of water and, you know, physiology was at work, so
And the way this worked out is the trustee announced at the beginning that if you need to use the bathroom, that there's a key hanging somewhere down that little hallway in the tiny little lobby area, and that you take it out the door and around the corner into the alleyway where there is a bathroom. Okay.
Yeah.
And or the breezeway, I think she called it. It's a breezeway. And so that's how you get to the bathroom. And then you just bring the key back, or if there's someone standing outside the door, obviously waiting, you hand it to that person and, you know, whatever. And our friend had already gone and done that. So, you know, okay, yeah, that works. Great. Whatever. But it was like another weird thing. Like, you know, there's a key, go out the building and into the breezeway and there you find a bathroom. It was just kind of strange, you know?
So essentially the bankruptcy hearing building, you know, something that is an official extension of, you know, California Superior Court. It has the same washroom, you know, system as any, you know, Chevron station
or a Starbucks, you know,
or perhaps a Starbucks. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I need to take care of some business in that way. And I go out, key's not there.
Right.
And I walk over to the bathroom and I walk over to the bathroom and I wait like maybe 5 minutes. And as we discovered later, there were two washrooms.
So women's and men's.
A women's and then a men's, a women's room and then a men's room that also had the symbols on it to indicate that it was like a family bathroom.
Oh, okay.
So you could go, so you could go in there to, you know,
change a
diaper or whatever.
Yeah.
And, and I'm standing around and nobody's coming out and I'm not hearing any sounds coming in from these bathrooms. I'm like, this is just weird. And I'm walking around and nobody's coming out and I go and I'm, you know, I check the doors one more time and they're definitely locked. And I'm knocking on the doors now just to see if I can get somebody to respond.
Because then you know where the key is. It's with
because
the person.
Because then I can
at
least know somebody's in there.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's responding. And I'm starting to kind of freak out a little bit. I go outside and I start walking up and down the street just to see if there's anywhere else. And the deli that we were in earlier, I noticed didn't have a public bathroom.
No.
So
It was small. I knew that it was like a convenience store and a deli sort of thing.
Yeah, it was a small place.
Yes.
So that wasn't going to be an option. And I one thing to note for those of you who aren't familiar with Santa Barbara, California, it is a rather wealthy place. People think living here in San Luis Obispo is expensive, but it really is a different world down in Santa Barbara. And I'm walking up and down the street. I'm not really seeing anything. And right next to the building is as it said on the sign, a private bank for a particular large bank here in America.
With an easily recognizable name, which we're not going to say.
And I thought, okay, you know, and I don't even know what the hell a private bank is. I've never seen this before in my life. And I figure, okay, well, I'll just walk in and ask if they know where a public washroom is. And maybe if I'm really lucky, they'll take mercy on me and go, we got one down the hall and around the corner. Just go ahead. You know, because while I'm clearly not someone who is likely to go to a private bank, and I probably look the part.
Probably.
I don't look like a homeless person.
Right.
I'm not going to, you know, go in there and use that as my bathing facility.
Right, yeah.
You know? But she says, no, she says, you know, I'm not really sure. I think there might be one at the gas station down the street and on the corner. I'm like, okay, thanks. This is no good.
Too far away.
I go back in and I ask our friend who's already been to the washroom, you know, I said, well, can you come back out here with me and show me where you found the key? Because maybe I'm just not seeing it.
It's possible.
Which is always a possibility. Yeah. And he comes out and he's not seeing it. So we go back in. We tell the attorney.
She's like, well, you know, what's going on? And you know.
Well, she said sometimes people misplace the key. So she comes out. She looks around for it. And we walk back outside. And again, there's, you know, a group of about a dozen people outside. They're sort of separated into different groups for different reasons. And we walk over to the bathroom again one more time. Nobody in there. Doors all locked. And even before that, I had run into a guy who was also waiting for the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, because this is what I thought, that someone had locked the key in the bathroom and just walked away and went, I'm not going to claim any kind of responsibility for that. And there's really no other options at this point. And the attorney walks back out to the front of the building with me, and she just says to everybody who's kind of standing around, does anyone have the key? And a woman goes, oh yeah, I have it. I didn't know where to put it. I'm like, oh great.
Yeah. Somebody must have handed it to her. And so, she kind of went, I don't know. So meanwhile,
that gets taken care of, and meanwhile, you know, the hearings are going
there,
on.
You know,
and
I'm sitting here in the front row, and I've lost track of how many cases have been heard. You know, mm-hmm. I don't think we're ready for ours yet, but we're getting close. And I wasn't keeping count. You know, I was kind of more paying attention to like, okay, what are people being asked? And it was what we were coached. You know, I mean, yeah it was those questions. So I'm like, okay, I can handle that, right? And I'm sitting here going, okay, if they don't come back soon, and our case gets called, right? I can go up there and I can be like, well, my attorney's here, but she's kind of in the bathroom, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, then they'd ask where, you know, well, where's your husband? Well, my attorney's helping him find the bathroom. Well, why is she helping him find the bathroom? Well, he's legally blind. You know,
which
like I could, it was true,
would be
you know,
a good cover,
I mean,
yeah.
It was true, you know, so that was part of the problem is you couldn't find the key. It turned out it wasn't there, but you know, you couldn't see that. And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, what happens next? Did they go, well, we'll go to the next case and come back to you or what? And I'm just sitting there going, is this trustee going to throw us out? You know, like, well, too bad. Come back and, you know, whenever or something. I mean, I don't know. But you came back in before then. So you both came back in before then. So it's like, all right.
Yeah.
All right. That's cool. And but I'm just sitting there going, all right. Now what am I going to do? You know,
I wasn't sure, obviously, at this point, because I'd been out of the room for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Where the order was either, and I would say maybe 2 to 3 hearings went by before they called our name. So I was a little surprised. I didn't think it would be that quick.
Yeah.
And but that's just a testament to the fact that these hearings generally don't take really long.
They really don't. It's the same set of questions. You know,
yeah.
You were gone for a chunk of it.
I was gone longer
but
than
I thought I was. It's the same set of questions, really, you know, and you have to have your ID, like I said, and your social security card, and, you know, you hand it over, they hand it back, and she's recording everything. She made that clear. So she says, okay, I've checked the ID, you know, and verified it or whatever. And then you get the same batch of questions. And if anything's wrong with your paperwork, then you get some other questions, you know, like the first lady up there, she's on one side, her attorney's over there on the other. And, the trustee asked this first lady, you know, do you own any, you know, property? And she said no. And then the trustee looks at the computer where she's looking at the paperwork, you know, of the case. And she's like, well, what about this land you own? And I'm like, oh, my God, how do you leave out land you own? You know, it's just that's holy cow, you know. So, I mean, you could ask some other questions like that. And there was a lady who spoke only Spanish. We actually saw her in the deli. And so they had a translator. They called up a translator. And someone in English answers and says, what language would you like? And she said Spanish. The trustee said Spanish. And then there was a woman that got on the line and translated everything to Spanish and then translated the woman's answers to English, although no is the same in English and Spanish. And you can probably figure out C, you know, from there. But she did it anyway. So that was interesting that there wasn't a translator in the room. It was someone you call, you know.
Yeah.
So that was kind of neat. And then there was a woman who was having a lot of difficulty answering the questions, and they seemed pretty obvious. She had some kind of a loan that she'd given an ex-husband that he owed her. And it was a pretty high amount of money. It seemed like it to me. And the amount of money, somewhere in her paperwork, there was a different amount of money that was owed to her for a loan. And it didn't come out right. And so the trustee's trying to make this work. And the lady's like, I don't know. I don't remember. I don't know. And the trustee gives her this funny look. And the lady says, I had a brain injury a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, you poor lady. She doesn't know. You know, she really doesn't know what happened with this money. And her poor attorney is trying to like help her through this. And I'm like, oh, man, that's a rough situation right there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's not a good thing. And yeah.
It was just, oh, my goodness. And the trustee's asking, do you have the address of your ex-husband? And she says, no, I don't know where he lives. I have no idea. And she said, well, do you talk to him at all? And she said, oh, yeah, I talked to him. She says, the trustee says, maybe you could ask him for his address next time. And the lawyer's like writing this all down, you know, really quick. It's just like, oh my gosh, what happens? Yeah, this is what happens when you go out into the real world and have these big kind of difficult situations. And you are essentially special needs at this point.
Yeah.
You know, you do need more than just an attorney, you know, and you don't have that. I mean, it's just kind of like, oh man, this has got to be so hard.
I have to wonder if in that case, you know, they had done I'm sure that they'd done a certain level of coaching beforehand. And if because, you know, she's brain injured, she just forgotten exactly what to say or
she didn't expect that question couldn't remember, you know,
or if this was a matter of where the attorney didn't really prepare her well enough or
it's hard to say with this kind of thing. You know,
we did notice and I'm sure that this happens, but we did notice that there was at least one attorney working there who had multiple clients, and there was and it might have been the same guy, I'm not sure. But not only that, from the way that he was going around talking to people, he hadn't actually met them yet.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm sure that given the very routine nature of bankruptcies, there are probably services where, you know, you can do everything essentially over the internet as far as filling out the papers and doing all the stuff and getting all your questions answered. And, you know, then the attorney just shows up for you on the day of the hearing. And considering that we do live here in this weird pocket where the bankruptcy court covers
such a wide swath of
land, you know, you could imagine that there might be a scenario where you've got, you know, attorneys that live and work already in Santa Barbara, and they can kind of cast a very wide net
and maybe offer
you know, a more discounted rate because they're already there and
or whatever
they can
you know?
Do, you know, whatever the case is. So,
right.
So,
but this, there was a guy that had printed out on, you know, just computer printer paper and really big letters, like names of obviously his clients, and he was walking around holding up the sign and aiming
like
it at people, you know? Yeah, and he was looking for his clients because he hadn't seen them. Like, he did not know what they looked like.
Yeah. And I just wonder if, you know, that particular instance with the woman who had this brain situation.
No, because she had a female attorney. That was a different attorney. Yeah, she had a female attorney.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't mean... I mean, there's any number of scenarios
here,
but...
I think the lady with the brain injury did meet with the attorney.
Okay.
Because I could see the attorney at one point kind of trying to coach her, like, okay, remember we said, you know, that kind of thing. And she doesn't remember. She can't. It's, how do you do this? You know, what do you do as a trustee with someone that's got the brain, this brain injury? You know, you can't recover from that. It's not, you know...
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that's a really tough thing. But there was, like you said, there was a guy who had, like, there was a guy that came up and had multiple clients. And there were two options at the end of when the trustee was done asking you questions. One was, you are coming back in January on a particular date and you talk to your attorney and figure out when.
Yeah.
With this and that you didn't give me this time. And the other was that your case was done.
Yeah.
So that first guy, like... Oh, what about this land you own? That one, you know, that one didn't, they were not considered done. They would have to come back, you know? So I think what you're talking about matches the guy that was probably walking around looking, I think it was him, you know, looking around for people he hadn't seen in person yet at all. So that was odd.
So we, you know, we witness all this and then it comes our turn and we get called and, you know, we go to sit where we're supposed to. Our attorney goes on the opposite side.
Right. We hand over our ID. The trustee hands it back.
And
we got to ask the questions we were coached.
Right. It's, you know, the questions are all really very straightforward, as we kind of said earlier.
One of them is like, you know, did you read the green paper? Yes, we read the green paper.
Right.
You know, did you read over everything your attorney gave you? Yes, we did. Did you sign everything? Yes, we signed it. You know, it's just simple things like that.
Now, the one and only thing in our bankruptcy, because for anybody that doesn't, no, and I was kind of educated on this too, and it makes sense. When you declare bankruptcy, and it doesn't necessarily matter what version of bankruptcy. Now, we were filing a Chapter 7, and a Chapter 7 is what they call a fresh start. That's where whatever debt you have is essentially discharged. You don't owe it anymore. It disappears, as far as you're concerned. And... The way bankruptcy works is you go into, you know, you file all your assets, you file all your debts with the court, and when you're trying to file a Chapter 7, what you want to prove is whatever assets you have, there's really nothing there that is above exemption limits that the trustee can then take and give over to your creditors.
Right, and I know they asked about the mobile home, kind of.
Well,
in an indirect way, you know, they ask, do you own property?
Well, and that's the thing. The one and only thing that our attorney was really concerned about is we do have this mobile home that we live in, and we own it.
We have a mortgage.
We have a mortgage on it, and arguably we have some equity in it. It's not...
This thing is ancient. Okay. This is not a new fancy anything.
Under the best circumstances, honestly, today... If we put this thing on the market, we might be able to sell it for what we owe on it and cover our closing costs.
But that'd be it.
We wouldn't walk away with any cash to actually get another place to live in pocket.
Right. So, I mean, it's not, you know, all that. But then she was asking about that, and we were, you know, we had to do certain things to try to determine what we thought this would be on the market, you know, if it was sold today. And so we'd gone through those steps and we were coached about, okay, well, here's what you've done. So when she asks this, you tell them you did this, and that's how you determine the cost. But the trustee didn't ask that. She asked, well, do you rent the space? And we said, yes, we rent the space. And she went, okay, and just moved on.
Yeah. You know? Because the thing that our attorney, you know, we spent some time on when we were getting all the papers together was figuring out what would this thing, if we really honestly were going to put it on the market, what would it really be worth? And ultimately, I mean, anybody that has even the most mild understanding of how these things work would look at it and go, because there's even a, because part of the way bankruptcy is supposed to work is you're not supposed to come out of bankruptcy and A, be homeless.
Right.
B,
it's not supposed to work that way.
Have no ability to, be productive and make money. So there's things that are like, you know, tools of the trade are exempt.
Right. So like our computers, because we work online, you know, it's things like that.
Your home is exempt. Now, your home is exempt up to a point. So if you own, you know, if you're bankrupting against $500,000 and you own a $2 million home, that's a different story.
Yeah, that's but quite,
if you're bankrupting against $500,000 and you own a $200,000 home and you owe someone there's certain scenarios where you might lose that property, but for the most part you're going to be exempted, and the law is written in such a manner because, again, they don't want you to come away and not have a place to live.
Right.
And
that's not have a way purpose, to work. You know, like, so they even asked, there was a couple that they'd asked about whose mortgage, they'd come in for bankruptcy before and the case got extended because they didn't quite make it through the first time.
Yeah.
And they'd come back and taken 2 years in between point A and point B. And she was asking if they were paying on their house, if their house was paid up, and they're like, well, we're working on it, you know?
Yeah.
So she's trying to establish this sort of thing. But with us, as soon as she said, you know, do you pay space rent? And we said, yes, because we do. And she just went on. Like, that's all I want to know. Okay.
Yeah, and,
you know,
and
with
the,
that,
yeah,
as far as the house.
And the big thing that our attorney wanted us to kind of nail down is, you know, we put down on our documents that we believed the valuation of our house was $42,000, and that was based on, I had talked to a realtor who had sold another unit in the, that's actually right across from us.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then I found a unit in another part of town that was very similar to ours that sold, and that was kind of what my basis for that was.
Right, so we'd had that all planned out. You know, if she asks this, how did you determine the value? That was how we determined the value.
Yeah.
But she didn't ask that. She just wanted to know if we owned any land.
Yeah, and once that was clear that we didn't,
she
it
didn't
was
care
over.
Anymore. She's like, yeah, that's it. But she did ask you another odd question.
Well, she asked, you know, we, as I've said before on the show, and this was in retrospect kind of a dumb move, but we did actually form an LLC earlier this year, and mm-hmm. I actually filled out those papers like a week or two before we had the bankruptcy consultation.
Yeah.
And once that happened and it looked pretty clear that we were probably going to go down that road, I just kind of I didn't do anything else with the LLC. I didn't open a bank account. I didn't make a website. I didn't do anything.
You know,
I just said
nothing.
Let's just keep this at zero so there can be no question that the business has, you know, no value.
Right.
And she did ask me about that, and I explained what I just explained
mm-hmm.
in much lesser words.
Right.
And then she asked what the business was going to do, and I said, digital media production. And then
and she said, is that what you do?
And she looked
and
at me
said,
and she
yes.
said, is that what you do? And I said, yes, because
that's what he does.
I mean, I've had a modicum, a very modest amount of income in 2014 doing that, and I made sure that I declared that and,
mm-hmm, right.
and all
yeah,
of
you
the
do
whatevers.
All that. You do all that.
And,
yeah,
right. And that was, you know, and then that was it, and she just said, okay, you're...
She never asked what I do.
No.
You know? It's on there. I mean, you know, yeah. Freelance writer. I mean, I guess she got that, but she never asked. But I remember sitting there thinking, okay, she's asking him what he does. I better have an answer for her if she asks what I do. And she didn't ask.
And
that was it. And the case was done.
In a perfect world, you know, if you have to go bankrupt, the easiest way to do it is to not have any property that's worth anything. Or, like, say, for example, if you're just flat out renting, you know, if you're just living in an apartment or a house and you don't own it at all.
It's not yours.
Then there's no question there. And if you own... You know, if you own a car, and
I mean,
in a lot
do,
of cases your
ancient.
Car can be exempt unless, again, it's a situation where it might be worth a lot of money, you know, those kind of things. And essentially, the way the trustee looked at ours is that we were just renting. So,
yeah,
that was really
that's up to her. You know, I mean, it's all true.
Yeah, and that was really, you know,
that was it. And what was the word? It wasn't your case. Was it concluded? It wasn't that word.
I think she did say concluded.
Was it concluded? Okay, so that was it. It was concluded or extended.
Yeah, your hearing is concluded, and you know, thank you for your time. And she gave us our IDs back, and we were done, and
yeah.
We walked out the door.
Kind of dazed, and, like, holy crap, it's done. You know?
And very much relieved that it not only that the whole thing was over after nearly taking 7 months, but
right. It took a lot. It just weighs on you too, you know.
But that it went so smoothly, and I mean, it's done. It feels very good to be done, and there was something very nice about kind of having that bookend where. It kind of went away with 2014.
Yeah.
I mean, if we had to do it this next week, it would have been what it was. But there was just something nice about, you know, having it, you know, 2 days before the end of the year and
just be done, just and like, be gone, and just goes, all of that go away.
It goes away. So
it had been hanging over us for so much of 2014, you know. And yeah, now I think like creditors can come for 60 days.
Well,
right.
Yeah, I mean,
if they want to, but no one showed up. Like they at no. the end of every hearing, every case, the trustee asked, "Are there any creditors present today?" And nobody had any creditors present
creditors.
On December 29th.
Well, <You know? laughs> yeah, I think
nobody's
though,
coming for that, you know?
I think that generally though, from what I've heard from other stories, that creditors rarely show up at these kind of bankruptcies because there's just no point mm-hmm. for them.
Right. They can't get enough out of it to you know, make it
they,
worth
unless
it.
They've really, I mean, I'm sure that there are occasions where it happens, but I bet it's probably less than 5% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there is a 60-day period in which if they want to, you know, file some kind of objection, they can.
But they probably won't.
But
we're still waiting. We kind of, it's over, but it's not, you know,
So, you know, if nobody contacts our attorney and they would go through her directly,
mm-hmm.
if no one contacts our attorney by, we'll just say March 1st, then, you know, we'll say that for sure it's done. And then there'll be a little bit of homework to do after that. You know, really for me. Not so much for you because
I won't get the numbers right anyway.
Well, no, but you don't. But the debts that we discharged were only in my name,
mm-hmm,
so
right,
it was like what I'm going to say here doesn't automatically apply to you, but
okay.
You know, what I'll do is you know, maybe around my birthday, which will be the middle of the year, and a few months after this should all really have been done. You know, I'll run my credit and just make sure that none of the creditors are pulling, you know, like they're still, like they're not still, say, reporting me for late payments or anything like that. Because once the whole thing is discharged, it's done.
As
they
far
can't
as that,
do that anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll do that later on just to make sure nothing weird is going on.
Mm-hmm.
But, and that was pretty much it after we just walked out. We talked with our attorney for a little bit. I had a couple questions for her and then. We, you know, since we were in Santa Barbara and everybody was in kind of a good mood and
because it was done and it was kind of getting nice out.
And I mm-hmm. really never have actually been to Santa Barbara
right.
before. So
yeah. So this was our first trip. Yay. Yeah. Bankruptcy.
Yeah. It'll be nice. It's one of those places that I've always wanted to go visit. So it'll be nice at some point in the future to go back.
Yeah. And just have time to just
and
hang
just
out.
Actually enjoy it. But. Mm-hmm. We did drive over to, there's a pier called Stearns Wharf.
Right.
And we went out on the pier and took some pictures, and then we went over to the Santa Barbara Mission.
Right.
And took some pictures.
Right, and they had their church open, sort of, partway.
Yeah,
you could at least come in and take a look.
Yeah, the cathedral was actually open,
yeah.
So we could actually go in.
It's pretty
and
neat
see
from
it.
An art perspective. I mean, I'm not religious, but the art is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we did that, and that was pretty much it. We got something to eat and came home, and we were back... I think we were back home by about 2:30.
Yeah.
So.
And I was done by that point. I had no more energy.
Yeah. So, very glad to say that whole, you know, situation, for the most part, is behind us. And And this is a great time for me to mention our support page at hypernonsense.com/support because, and you know, just because the bankruptcy is done, you know, it doesn't mean that everything is
magically, yeah, you know, is perfect.
Is rainbows and unicorns in terms of our finances. So
not at all.
If you'd really love to help us out, you can go there and you can make a donation through PayPal, Square, Cash, or Bitcoin. Or if you really want to support the show, you can join our Patreon.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Where you can make a monthly contribution at whatever amount you feel is worth it for the show. And if you can't or just aren't interested at this point in helping us out financially, even if you go to that page, there's other things you can do to help out the show. Write an iTunes review. Links are
stuff
all there.
Like that, yeah.
And I'm also going to throw one thing out there, too, to what I said earlier. And one way that you can kind of help the show on a recurring basis that really won't cost you any more money is if you want to, say, share your cable ID and password with us so we can watch more TV shows.
That's not quite legal.
Family sharing. Netflix family sharing is allowed. And I think that anyone who listens to this show is like our family. So, just saying. You could do that. You could. You could. There's no reason why you couldn't.
Anyway.
So, that was the 29th. And then, obviously, the 31st was New Year's.
Right. And we just kind of chilled here because, my God, I didn't have anything left at that point. I was so full of, like, fighting allergens and stuff, you know, between Christmas and then I hadn't quite recovered from Christmas and then we're traveling out to Santa Barbara where I'd never been, you know.
Right.
And then, so by New Year's, we just kind of like, you know, had a nice dinner and at home, Sean cooked a steak, really, really good. And we watched a movie and, you know, I finished what was left of a bottle of wine that I'd been working on that was given to me for free as a Christmas bonus one year. It was the last bit of that. And it just kind of chilled.
Yeah.
You know, because at this point, we didn't really need to be in a crowd of people anymore.
No,
it was
kind of
like, no, we need to just sort of just chill.
Yeah, we rarely, I really don't think in all the years we've been together, with the exception of the New Year's Eve that we spent
in San Francisco.
Other than that, which was really not so much about just you and me.
Well, friends of ours were there, so we went with friends.
And we went out to see the fireworks, which is not the same as, you know, hanging out at a bar or a club.
Right, and, you know, I do want to, at some point, I want to hopefully be healthy enough to, like, go see bands downtown again, you know? But I wouldn't want to do this on New Year's Eve, because that's one of the days of the year that's amateur night.
Yeah.
You know, people that don't know their limits discover them painfully on New Year's. And I don't really want to be around, you know, a bunch of people that don't know how to drink on New Year's because there's going to be a lot of them. Like, you know, there's always somebody in a bar that's had too much, you know. But on New Year's, it seems like there's a lot of people that have no idea that they should have stopped, you know, six drinks ago or something. And it's kind of annoying to me, you know. It just is. And I don't know if it's because of my age. I think I've always felt like this, but I've got a pretty good tolerance, so I kind of feel like, come on. You know, I mean, I know alcohol hits people differently for different reasons, but I just get annoyed, you know?
Yeah, and not only that, I don't drink, so I don't even care.
Right, and there's been times when we've gone to bars and, you know, I wanted a Jack and Coke, and you just wanted a Coke because you don't drink, because alcohol does not like you.
Mm-mm.
It gives you, like, headaches and shit. So, you know, he'll order it, and the bartender will try to hand him the Jack and Coke, and he'll be like, no, that's mine, you know? And they give me this look like they're impressed. I'm like, it's a drink. Why is this impressive?
Yeah.
If you didn't think it was impressive when a guy was drinking it, why is it impressive if I am, you know? But I don't know. I just didn't want to deal with, like, the crowd again was a problem. I was still recovering from everything. I'm still recovering from December in general, I think. And physically, you know, and I didn't want to be around a crowd of people. I didn't want to deal with a bunch of, you know, I don't mind people who are inebriated. I mind people who have gone, like, way over and have no idea, you know. It's like hanging out with toddlers, you know. It's like, no, that's okay, you know.
Right.
So I don't know that I'd do New Year's downtown, you know. I mean, I can drink at home and be perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But I just feel like, you know, New Year's Eve and St. Patrick's Day are like amateur night. And it's just, no, mm-mm.
So that pretty much gets everything caught up. We got a little bit of feedback I want to go over here. So, Jen, if you can read that.
Okay, so Nathan sent us a comment on our website, and this is in reference to the previous show with the Peppermint Choo Choo song, right?
Yeah.
So
Peppermint Choo Choo.
Yeah, so he looked it up for us, and his comment says, according to Joni Summers' Wikipedia entry, that song was written for a 70s animated ABC special of the same name, but it was scrubbed.
So that's an interesting bit of trivia. That means that
Somewhere out there was animation for the Peppermint Choo Choo.
Well, at least it was planned.
It was planned, at least, yeah. So that's interesting. It does sound 70s, I get that. You know?
Yeah.
Interesting. I wonder what on earth the story would have been, but I guess we'll never know. We'll never know. And then we have an email from Nathan as we were talking about the problems we were having with the router and getting on the internet, which we haven't had in a little while. So he very kindly emailed us to say, if you want, I can send you a Cisco Linksys router.
Which is a very kind offer and not one that we'll take up at this time, only because I believe I've discovered the solution for what to do when our internet goes down. And like a lot of things that have to do with the technology, it's really stupid. Because when I talked about how our time capsule airport thing was giving us problems before, I thought, well, maybe the thing itself was dying. And a few days after that show, I had the internet go down again. And after the last time I'd had to reset everything before that, I started to notice some patterns. And all I did was, after our internet connection went down, I power cycled the cable modem. You know, I disconnected the time capsule and I waited for a little while, like a couple of minutes. And then I plugged the time capsule back in. And after it booted back up and a minute or so, it was fine. So I think really more than anything else, the problem that I was running into is just that I wasn't giving the equipment enough time to kind of cycle itself and kind of reset everything, because we never had a problem like this with the DSL. And I think this gets back to how, you know, Charter is using dynamic IPs and DSLs usually use static IPs and all that. But the point of all this is to say, thank you, Nathan. It's a kind gesture. As of right now, I'm not going to take you up on that offer because I think we're actually going to be okay.
It was nice. It was very nice.
Thank you for that. And I wanted to say this. You know, I kind of realized after Nathan was so quick to make that offer of actually mailing us a router, which is incredibly generous. I kind of realized with the way things have gone over the last few months, because when we were asking for Target e-gift cards, Nathan sent us one, and then Nathan signed up for our Patreon. Nice. He offered to send us a router. It dawned on me that Nathan is kind of like the dad of hyper nonsense.
He comes and saves us.
We just kind of go, we need something. We need this. And Nathan just kind of goes, well, I can do this, you know.
It's very, very nice.
Which is very kind and generous, and we really do appreciate it. And we appreciate everyone who listens. And
that goes back to saying that, you know, everyone in the that listens to the show is family, right?
Exactly.
So we found exactly, you know, how that works. Yeah.
Send us all your Hulu's, Netflix, and HBO Go passwords. No, I didn't actually say that.
Anyway.
I just meant it. Anyway. This show has gone long enough.
I got to take more medication pretty soon, so let's not stretch things out too far, because I don't want to deal with it.
Thank you for listening. HyperNonsense.com is the website of choice. You can email us, show@HyperNonsense.com. You can leave a comment for this episode, which we should come up with a keyword for really quick. I don't know.
Bankrupt.
We already did that.
Oh, we did. We can't do peppermint choo-choo, that's for sure.
No, we can't do that either.
New Year's?
How about just New Year?
New Year. I like that.
So go to hypernonsense.com/New Year, and you can find the show notes for this episode where you can leave a comment, or you can go into the archive, leave one comment or more comments for all of those apps. You can follow us on Twitter at HyperNonsense. And don't forget, you can join our Google Plus group.
We do have one now.
Mm-hmm. That's right, Google Plus. We'd really love to get that up to double digits. I think we're at 8 members.
And that includes us.
Includes me and Jen. So it'd be really fun if maybe by the end of January we could just get that up to 10. And, I guess it'll be a test over the next few months to see if we need to keep the Google Plus group. But we wanted to have something where we could kind of interact between shows, and Jen doesn't use Facebook.
I don't do Facebook. I'm done with Facebook. I've been done with Facebook, so yeah.
And make sure go to hypernonsense.com/contact. That's where you can see all the ways that you can interact with us, as well as our various subscription methods: Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, iTunes, and just a plain old RSS feed is there. You can plug it into whatever your pod thing of choice is. So that'll be it for now. With any luck, we'll be back with you next week.
Bye, people.
So earlier in the show, I said I realized something and I would say it later.
And you forgot.
I didn't forget, but what I realized sort of became unrealized, and I'm glad I didn't say anything about it right off, so I don't know if anyone noticed, but it seemed to me like earlier in the show, there was just a little bit of audio interference on Jen's mic.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like throughout the course of the show, that's gone away. So yeah. My first thought was, oh, great, this is the new computer.
No.
I need to blow up and burn everything now.
No, it's fine.
But I think it's gone away. So I don't know. If you have good ears and you thought you noticed something and you're still listening, then let us know.
Yeah.
And
I think it must have gotten better.
So, I'll see how it sounds in the play. Sometimes these things are more noticeable in the recording and they're not there in the playback, or then after the actual MP3 file gets created, they go away.
Okay.
Okay, that's it. Bye.
Bye.